First up, we have Manning Marable, who really does not need much of an introduction. He is a professor of history and director of the Institute for Research in African American Studies, and co-founder of the Black Radical Congress. So, without further ado.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to say how pleased I am to be with you this evening to talk about the beginnings of a new political movement in the United States. Because it's not really about electing a candidate. It's about transforming the United States to be a true democracy. I have to also, before I get into the talk, I have to apologize because I never do this, but there's a meeting going on of the Black Radical Congress Coordinating Committee in my house right now. So after I talk, unfortunately, I want to stay, but unfortunately I have to leave. We passed out flyers in the audience, if you don't have some, they're circulating around, for a conference on Education Works, Prisons Don't. Education, not incarceration, that's being held next Friday at the Thurgood Marshall Academy High School on 135th Street and Edgecombe Avenue in Harlem. You're all invited to come. It'll be a weekend conference, Friday night, all day Saturday, that really focuses on the prison industrial complex, racial profiling by the NYPD, and its connection with the dismantling of public education, both in New York and throughout this country. The great political challenge we have to face in the United States is the construction of a human rights culture, a civil society that preserves freedom, but also protects those who are the most vulnerable, children, seniors, the poor, the unemployed, a humane society that defends both the principle of freedom and equality, a just society that seeks the realization of human fairness. The Green Party's campaign in the year 2000 and other progressive motions against the prison industrial complex, against structural racism, against sexism, heterosexism, and homophobia, all of these progressive movements move us toward a culture of human rights, but only if we have the courage of our convictions, only if we are willing to speak truth to power. Many Americans during this election year want to know why most Americans will not vote. The majority of Americans in November at the election are not going to vote. And the simplest answer for that is that politicians that we have to choose from are completely disconnected from any real concerns or problems in our daily lives. How can anyone really imagine Al Gore in the waiting room of a public hospital with a sick child, or George W. Bush paying for his groceries with food stamps, or living in public housing? All of us know that part of our problem is structural. We have a winner-take-all electoral system with single-member congressional districts. That means that the substantial minorities, up to 49% of a district's voters, have no voice to represent them in their own government. Congressional districts are constructed in a way, in such a manner that 80% are non-competitive. But over the last decade, the greatest distortion of the so-called democratic electoral system in the U.S. has been the massive amount of money that's dumped into the system. The U.S. government is for sale, and wealthy contributors and large corporations are determining the outcomes of most political campaigns even before a single vote is cast. It has become common knowledge that one can buy a public office if a candidate has unlimited personal resources. In about 90% of all congressional races, the person who wins, regardless of her or his ideology, party affiliation, or public policy positions, 90% of the time is the person who has the most money. In this country, we have the best government, that money can buy. We have to transform them. A lot of people argue that, unfortunately, despite the need for democratic change in this country, despite the bad choices we have, despite the corrupt and money-laden, undemocratic political system that we have, that we've got to go with the lesser of evils. There are three basic arguments that I hear that come from liberals and progressives about why we should vote for Gore over Ralph Nader. Argument number one, Gore is a positive good, not a necessary evil. That position lacks credibility, even when it's presented by people like Barney Frank and the Congressional Black Caucus. Gore has a long track record of hostility to black people's interests, especially on issues related to criminal justice and poor women's rights. It was Gore who pushed for the passage of the 1994 Crime Act that broadly expanded the federal death penalty. It was Gore earlier this year who promised to cover America with, quote, a blanket of blue with the hiring of 50,000 more police nationwide. It was Gore, according to journalist Alexander Cockburn, who has pushed for block grants for prison expansion in the states with the proviso that such federal grants would be issued only if each state ensures that prisoners served at least 85% of their sentences. It was Gore, as a congressman, who voted to ban federal funding of abortions for poor women, even in cases of rape. It was Gore who finally convinced Clinton to sign the destructive 1996 Welfare Act. It was Gore who almost single-handedly pushed Clinton's administration to the right by first hiring Reagan stooge David Gergen and sleazy political consultant Dick Morris. So I think we can dispense with the first argument. The second argument, Gore's not great, but he's all we've got to defeat the right. And this is the mantra that one hears all throughout this country. There's a simple response to it. The best way to defeat the right is to build a powerful, democratic movement within black and brown and white and Asian American and Pacific Island communities, within labor, within gay and lesbian, within women's rights, in environmental constituencies. That is the only way you're going to defeat the right in the United States. And the third argument. A vote for Nader is a vote for Bush. One hears this over and over again. There are several clear reasons why it is the interest of oppressed people, why it is in the interest of black people and progressives to vote for Nader over Gore. One technical reason is that in reality, we don't have one national election. We have 50 separate state elections organized, as I said earlier, on a winner-take-all principle. In about 40 of the 50 states, the election is over. Gore is ahead in New York. Have you seen an ad run by Bush in New York State in the last 3 months? I haven't seen it on television. And the reason is that Gore is 20 points ahead. The mantra that a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush in New York is meaningless. In California, in states like Texas, throughout most of the South, Bush is going to carry it. Most of the West, other than the Pacific, Bush will carry it. Gore is ahead in very key states in the Northeast. Only in the Midwest can one make a serious debate about whether or not to vote for the lesser evil. In most states, the election is over. A vote for Nader is not a vote for Bush. But let's focus on those states even where the issue is contested. What we need in this country is a genuine democracy, not organized around winner-take-all, but around a system of proportional representation. We don't have that in this country. And the practical reason that African Americans, that women, that gays and lesbians should support and join the the campaign for Nader and the Green Party, is that any democratic structural reforms within the political process will have to take a mass majoritarian movement. The time to build that movement is now, by what we do as we face this election in the next several days. No matter how hard we try, we will not see fundamental change occur within the Democratic Party. An independent, progressive political party will never be built simply by voting for the Democrats, no matter how progressive they seem to be. A word finally about Ralph himself. He is a dedicated anti-corporate activist, the country's leading progressive voice on environmentalism, on consumer rights, against sweatshops and globalization. Yet he is hardly perfect. The movement around Ralph is nearly all white and mostly middle class. Nader is personally and deeply committed, I know, as just as a human being, to racial equality and racial justice and women's rights. But often he does not adequately or effectively lay out what he truly believes. This campaign's literature should reflect, I think, more fundamentally the connections between gender, race, and class in the construction of a democratic resistance movement. But the truth of the matter is that Latinos and black folk, oppressed racially and in terms of class, are the fundamental victims of corporate power in this country. As long as the Greens, though, are overwhelmingly white, they will lack the capacity to build or even maintain a truly democratic movement. So what is to be done? We have to build a different kind of movement with the Green Party, but with labor, with Latinos, with gays and lesbians and bisexuals, with feminists, a very different kind of democratic movement as we enter 2004. I would argue, along with Cornel West, along with TransAfrica executive Randall Robinson, along with actor Danny Glover, and dozens of other African-American actors, artists, writers, political activists, including myself, we've made the decision about what to do in November. We say, vote your hopes, vote your visions, and not your fears. It's time to vote for Ralph Nader.
Thank you, Professor Marable. He brings up a lot of good points and issues that need to be addressed within the Nader campaign. And actually, I urge you all to come to our next meeting, which is going to be addressing the question of racial justice and whether or not it is taking a central enough position for people active on the Nader campaign.